This is The Naked Scientist, and this week we're looking at how science influences art. Still to come, we'll hear about Geek Pop, the world's first online music festival featuring lots of music that's inspired by science and scientists. We'll also find out why laughter is contagious.
But first, when you think of stand-up comedy, scientists may not be the first thing that comes to mind. Science, though, has inspired comedian Robin Ince, who you may have seen or heard touring with Ricky Gervais or through one of his regular appearances on television or BBC Radio. He's currently on a nationwide tour with a show called Bleeding Heart Liberal, which draws heavily from his love of science. I caught up with him to find out how scientists can play a role in modern comedy.
Well, Bleeding Heart Liberal was originally going to be a more political show than it is, but it started to edge more and more into things about Carl Sagan and Voyager and what was put on the golden record, as it's known, that went through space with the information for whatever lucky extraterrestrial would find out about us. There's some poo jokes in it, and when there's not poo jokes, then it's probably me either talking about my favourite geneticists or astronomers. So I think it is at the moment primarily a very enthusiastic show. I mean, that's really what I am. I'm halfway between being a self-loathing curmudgeon and, you know, an Open University lecturer who's accidentally eaten some mushrooms he found under the bark of a tree.
It seems quite a risk, actually, to talk about, as you said, your favourite geneticist. I'd imagine a lot of people don't even have a favourite geneticist.
Well, I think part of, if there is a key to it, and I don't know if there is to, right from the start, lay out the fact that you are not smarter than the audience. I think that you can sometimes almost look kind of supercilious or superior, whereas I am playing it very much from the angle that I'm not from a scientific background. I've got increasingly into science, and I try and make it as silly as possible. So that part of the humour is perhaps the ridiculousness of a man jumping up and down doing nursery rhymes that were supposedly invented by Gregor Mendel.
So I take it from that Mendel's your favourite geneticist.
Do you know what? I'm not. They were so troublesome. You know the way that James Watson just suddenly fell out of the chart last year, you know, whether it was justified or not. I just find it, I'm always fascinated by intellectual monks, whether they're, you know, inventing tonic wines, whether they're noticing moments where the moon has been struck by a small asteroid, or whether they're counting wrinkled and smooth peas.
Of course. Well, that's the Mendel story. And you said you also mentioned your favourite astronomer. Now, of course, they're in the news a lot at the moment because it's the International Year of Astronomy. Mm. So who would be your pick for that?
In truth, what I often do is I have a pretend top three in which I never reveal two of them, which allows me, therefore, to constantly change my list without anyone realising year by year. Ultimately, it's probably Carl Sagan, just because Carl Sagan's my favourite scientist. I know that many people would say that his actual level of scientific achievement in terms of discovering a new theory or whatever it may be is not great, but his zeal, his passion, the fact that he turned so many people onto science, you know, watching Cosmos, reading his books, which combined, yeah, magnificent poetry with hard facts, and I find that I'm quite obsessed by him. And Eratosthenes. I've been trying for 5 years to write a routine about Eratosthenes, the man who first got an approximate idea of what the circumference of the Earth was through shadows, sticks and wells. I still haven't found it. Maybe when I come to Cambridge or Norwich, I shall attempt another making Eratosthenes funny routine.
So obviously science inspires you. How are your audiences responding?
Every now and again, there are some people who are a little bit confused. I was doing a gig in Bromsgrove, and as I was just sitting, sweating outside the stage door at the end of the gig, I just heard a couple go past going, well, to be quite honest, I didn't understand quite a lot of that. So it's a starting point, hopefully. What I found is lovely is finding out that people have gone out and bought books by Richard Feynman and books by Carl Sagan and other science books off the back of seeing the tour and seeing me play music festivals. I also think that people are much smarter than we imagine. For instance, when I played Reading and Leeds last year, the Leeds Music Festival, they said afterwards, you know, if I was you, I might dumb down for Reading. And I found that at Reading, like, you know, you can play to 3,000 reasonably drunk teenagers and they will get what you're talking about. If you approach something passionately, and hopefully there are some jokes in there as well, they don't immediately switch off because it's not just about drinking and shagging and the things which TV generally seems to believe is the only thing that an audience can handle.
This year is also an anniversary of 200 years since Charles Darwin was born and 150 years since The Origin of the Species was published. How does Darwin fit in with your show?
I think the first time that I became truly fascinated was reading an essay by Jacob Bronowski, where he talked about if you drove past Down on a certain day in a certain year, you would have seen a young man playing a bassoon to a flower. And it was Darwin making his son, one of his sons, play the bassoon to see how bassoon playing and music affected flowers. And I thought, now this is an interesting man. Obviously, I also was a reasonably big fan of the theory of evolution. It seems like a pretty good theory to come up with. And so the show does end on about 15, sometimes 20 minutes about Charles Darwin, about having, you know, 20 years locked in your head, having this amazing theory. And then I can't resist a little bit about the woolly-headed nature of creationism.
Do you feel there is actually a movement towards more science-inspired comedy? Several of your peers, Ricky Gervais is obviously very pro-science. Not a lot of it actually makes it into his stand-up routines. But
no, I don't believe any of it will make it into even his new show, which is entitled Science. Well, in fact, there is a huge, an accidental rational movement, basically. And I think after we put together the show Nine Lessons and Carols for Godless People, where we, on the science side, you had Simon Singh and Ben Goldacre and Richard Dawkins, their various musicians, people like Jarvis Cocker and Darren Heyman, and then comedians, and all of them were doing something on the rational world. And you have people like Dara O'Brien, Chris Addison, Stuart Lee, and Josie Long, and all of them are approaching things from a rational perspective, and especially Dara, who has a physics background, he's very excited about talking about science. And I think there is, perhaps, I don't know, but perhaps because TV isn't really pandering very much to intellectual programming. I hate, intellectual programming. That's a terrible thing to say. But do you know what? Knowledge, learning, anything like that. So I think there has been an accidental rational stroke scientific movement start in comedy.
That was Robin Ince explaining how scientists have inspired his current stand-up tour and how many of his colleagues are shifting towards a scientific viewpoint. He's on tour across the UK with Bleeding Heart Liberal, so go to www.robinince.com to find out if there's a gig that you can go to near you.
Lifting the lab coat on the world's best science. The Naked Scientists.